Welcome to the Market Genius AI podcast. This is our RevTech edition of the show, where we showcase go-to-market tools and discuss trends, strategies, and development with leaders of those tools.
So in this episode, our guest is Ryan Milligan, the VP of Sales Marketing RevOps at QuotaPath. It's great to have you on. I don't think we had anyone presenting to us the sales compensation yet in this podcast. So you are pioneering that space, and I'm looking forward to have this conversation around the technology that you and QuotaPath offering to your customers, but also the best practices around that.
Perfect. Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited about this for sure.
Everyone's favorite conversation, sales comp.
I love it. Really love it.
Of course you do. Head of RevOps. Once you lead a sales team, it's a nightmare.
Well, I've been there too. Come on. Give me some credibility here.
Oh, fair. Well, yeah, Ryan, great to have you on. Can you give us just the elevator pitch of what QuotaPath is?
Yeah, absolutely. So hi, everyone. I'm Ryan. I lead the go-to-market teams here at QuotaPath. QuotaPath helps you automate the process of calculating and paying commissions. But more than that, it helps you use your comp plan to drive sellers to deliver the right type of revenue for your business. Truth is, a lot of times a comp plan is an after-the-fact calculation that happens when a rep has closed a deal, siloed in Excel, typically run by a finance team. And the problem is that comp plan is not actually driving the rep's behavior in real time. And we feel strongly that your comp plan is the best tool to drive a seller to close better revenue for your business. And that's what we're trying to help. So save time and money calculating commissions. Yes, big priority for us. But uniquely use your comp plan to drive a change in human behavior and use your comp plan as a performance driver.
Love it. Yeah, I'm excited to see how the tool works and dive in a little bit further there. How long has QuotaPath been around and what has your journey there been?
Yeah, so the company was founded in 2018, but go-to-market really started late 2020, early 2021. I've been here for a little over three years now, and I've been a RevOps practitioner my whole career. And so came in a RevOps leadership position and then actually took over leadership of our sales and marketing teams about a year and a half ago, which has been really fun as a RevOps leader transitioning into more of a go-to-market leadership role, which I'm happy to talk about. And the thought process there is I know the pain that somebody faces when they're calculating commissions. I used to pay commissions in Excel for a team of 30 reps. And so I know the challenges and so could lead our go-to-market teams to speak to that buyer more consistently about those challenges. So it's been a lot of fun for sure.
Yeah, that's something Demetrius and I have been chatting about with people on the podcast more and more is like, will RevOps leaders ultimately become CROs more often because of what that role is demanding? And so I'm curious to hear a little bit from you of like, what have been the pros of being a RevOps leader and moving into it? And then what are like the steeper learning curves for you?
Yeah, so the pros are definitely the kind of analytical and operational rigor you can bring to a go-to-market team. I call them the cash blinders. I don't have the cash blinders on. I can pretty quickly assess, like, does this deal actually have a path to close? Do we mathematically have a shot to hit our number based on the pipeline that we're generating and the throughput and the win rate? And where are we getting the best results? So I think I can come in pretty pragmatically and say, hey, we have a really good path. Here's what we need to do. Here's the changes we need to make. I also think it really helps that we sell to a RevOps leader. I speak the language. I face the problems day in and day out. And so I think that's been pretty fruitful. I think those two things have been really helpful. Learning curve stuff is just managing a deal, right? I've never been an individual seller. I've never carried my own quota. And so there's a lot that happens at, you know, on the 5 to the 95 yard line on how to get a deal done. And so it's been pairing the art of the sale from a rep and learning from the reps directly with the science of a sale that I bring. And it's been a really great combination. You know, I think that RevOps leaders are really well suited to be CROs, especially because a CRO is not an elevated VP of sales. It's a revenue leader who's trying to allocate resources, finite resources best to move the metric that's most important for the business. And I think, you know, sales leaders can be great CROs. Absolutely. You are going to have some bias there about emphasizing sales specifically when you might have a revenue retention problem, you might have a pipeline problem. And so I try to balance all those things collectively in that leadership role.
Yeah, a little bit easier for you to see the full picture than someone who grew up through the sales world and is just like looking to close the deal.
Yeah, for sure.
I think Ryan is spot on with his comment about the different dynamic when you becoming a CRO versus whatever background got you to that point, right? I think you can be a great seller, but your job is changing dramatically when becoming CRO. You're becoming more like a business person, being responsible for a company, right? If you don't sell, your marketing doesn't work, it's yours, right? So you can't say, oh, I'm hitting my quota, right? If the business is not going the right direction, it's all yours.
Especially if you're bringing in like low quality new customers, right? You know, with a CRO seat, you have to be able to say no to a bunch of new revenue that would sign the contract today because the revenue retention of that revenue is going to be terrible because they're not a great fit for whatever reason. So that's an interesting one to swallow for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And so QuotaPath's Series B company right now, where are you at in your funding journey and where are you investing the most?
We raised a $40 million Series B in 2022, so well-capitalized business. We're intentionally quite lean, so we're 47 people, I think, today. And our sales team is six people. I like a small, high-attaining quota powerhouse team. It's something I care a lot about. So we've been 100% plus quota attainment past five quarters blended as a team, which is a really big focus for me. Really operational efficiency of that team has been a key focus. In terms of where we're investing, you know, this is the year that we really become a completely AI-first product, which I'll show a little bit of a snippet of in a second. But whether you're in Excel or you are building a comp plan in QuotaPath historically, there are a lot of clicks, right? You have to design the quotas and then build the rules and the logic and then map the people to the plan and map the CRM. And so there's a lot of manual human intervention historically with either Excel or a tool like QuotaPath. Now, there's a lot of benefits, which I'll talk about, obviously, in a second. But AI is a really great tool to automate a lot of that human intervention. And so we just released the first step of this, which is AI-powered plan building, where we can actually just read your comp plan, whether through a PDF or a text description of your comp plan, and automatically generate your comp plan live in the product in like less than a minute. And so that saves 10 to 20 to 30 minutes of clicking and mapping around in the product, and we can do that in seconds for you. And so you'll see more of that evolution from our product, plan building to mapping to forecasting, leaning very heavily AI first in the business for sure.
Yeah, let's dive in and see it.
Yeah. So what's the use case you're planning to share with us?
So I'll go through two micro ones. The first is actually building and deploying a comp plan in QuotaPath using an AI first approach, where I'll take the text of a comp plan, drop it into the tool, and it'll build all the different components. So, and then from there, I can show the reps view and how the comp plan is actually driving the seller to close more revenue that's better for the business. So here I'm in plans. This is the way in which you're building and deploying compensation plans. You can see here, you can drag quotas or the different components for how someone earns, whether it's the commission rates they earn or the types of bonuses. But I'm actually going to start with our AI-powered plan builder. And so here you can either upload a document of your plan or just drop some text. So this is asking to build, and I'll hit generate. But this is asking to build a account executive comp plan with different levels of commission rates based on quota attainment. And then has some different components for accelerators, longer-term contracts, and outbound self-set contracts. And so what the AI is doing right now is it's reading this text of this comp plan and building all the corresponding plan structure, the quotas, the components, and the different rates as well. So we'll give it another couple seconds and it'll build this and we can talk through it in a second.
And does it also model out like what that impact to the business is for that, or is that down the line?
Yeah, so once you have the comp plan built, what it'll do is it'll show you how much somebody can earn and you can model earnings on a per person basis. You can also bring in historical data to say, hey, if this comp plan was in place last year with the revenue we actually had last year, how much would we have paid in commissions last year if that had been in place?
Okay, very cool.
So here you have the comp plan broken out and you can actually just apply all these components to the plan. So it'll drop down below. Skip that a second. But here we'll just open the different components here. So first thing you have is the quarterly quota. So this team member is on a $375K quarterly quota. they then earn different commission rates based on their attainment. So this is really nasty to do in Excel, especially because one deal can often bring you from one level of attainment to the next. So one deal could get you from 44% to, you know, 68%. And then some of the revenue you'll pay 5% on and some of the revenue you'll pay 7% on. So this was one of my biggest headaches when I did this in Excel. So you can see the different commission rates that someone earns. You have the quota set. They earn an extra 2% for a multi-year deal. They earn an extra 3% for an outbound deal. And they earn $1,000 for a large deal bonus. And so from here, what you would do is you would map these directly to the different variables in CRM. So how do you know if this is a multi-year deal? You would set these mappings directly from your CRM, whether you're using the existing mapping or creating a new mapping to pull that data in more actively. So goal here really is to speed up the process of actually building these plans. And it's also really helpful to spin up spiffs. So you could really easily say, hey, I want to add this spiff this period, where if we close more than 50K or more in the month of January, we get out to a fast start, pay an extra $1,000. And so what we're trying to do is help you use your comp plan as more of this living, breathing document that kind of changes to the needs of your business so you can motivate the right type of revenue based on the period.
So how do you connect this between the different roles? I mean, I'm pretty sure you're focusing on AEs, you have a customer success as well here, SDRs, you're covering all the roles, any comp plan, right?
Yeah, any type of variable comps. We do corporate bonuses, we do any sort of logic in which you pay somebody anything variable at all. Our thesis here is that you have one big metric you're trying to move this year, right? You told the board, we're going to move into the enterprise. And they said, great, how? And one of the big levers moving from the mid-market to the enterprise is your comp plan. You're going to give, let's say you're trying to get your average contract value from 10K to 50K. Okay, well, marketing has to go create more enterprise pipelines. So you're going to bonus them for bringing on pipeline that's bigger. SDRs have to set demos with bigger customers. So you're going to give them more money for setting those demos. The reps have to close more of that revenue. And then, you know, your customer success team has to renew more of it. And so all together, you're using the comp plan to have all of these different people fundamentally aligned and making more money if they generate, close, and renew enterprise revenue. And that's the whole point of the comp plan in the first place.
Okay, but how do you connect this with the financial targets on the both side, on the top line and also the commission line as a part of the field selling cost or sales and marketing cost?
So there's a couple things that we really focus on. One is reporting on what I call commission cost of sale. A lot of times teams don't do this really well because they pay BDR's commissions, then they pay the AE's commissions, then they pay the SDR leaders and all of these people separately. And they don't tend to pivot that data on the deal basis. So in reporting in our product, you're able to basically stack on a deal level, how much should I pay in commissions across all the different people who earned? So, hey, maybe my total blended commission rate on this deal was like 36% because I paid a BDR, her manager, an AE, her manager, the VP and CRO, and the solutions engineer and the marketer all commissions on this deal. And so we push that data directly into your CRM, and you can actually model how much you're paying on this deal across all the different people involved.
That's very helpful. I mean, I don't know how many times I was talking to this head of sales or CRO, trying to drag them out of this idea of splitting that deal between the too many roles and everybody's trying to take a credit for, I don't know, contacting, sending email. I mean, all of that, I'm just considering it to be bullshit. I think there's always, someone who is really driving the deal and actually is associated with a specific incentive that should be behind this. So I agree with you. And also illustrating that is super helpful.
And if it's okay with you, I'd actually love to show you what this does for reps, if that works.
Okay. Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So let me share that quickly. Okay. So basically, again, the ultimate goal of the comp plan is to drive a human to deliver revenue, and QuotaPath helps you do that, right? So I'm going to share the earnings side of the house here. So this is a comp plan where this team member is earning off of ARR services revenue multi-year. They get a percentage for multi-year deals they close and outbound self-set. And so first line of business is the rep can very clearly see how much money they're making on deals they've already closed and the mechanics of why. So if I open up this Medea deal, it'll show me, okay, I was from 50 to 100% attainment of quota for this deal. So I earned 12.5%. And then I earned an extra 4% because it was an outbound deal. So one pain point you're solving, right, is comp plans aren't transparent. The reps don't understand what they're earning. This gives that transparency to the rep, which is great for rep retention and overall engagement. But what I actually find more powerful for an ops leader or a sales leader is how the comp plan is driving the seller to change her behavior. So what we do is we actually sync to your pipeline. And what a rep can do is see, okay, this Liberty Bank shares deal is a multi-year deal, but it's also outbound. And so I can click on this deal and say, okay, if I were to close this deal, I'd make a 19.5% commission rate. And so, wow, I can make so much money on this deal because it's both, you know, I'm at 12.5% and it's multi-year and it's outbound. And what this has me doing is it has me comparing what I'm going to earn on this deal versus other deals in my pipeline. So, you know, I can earn $3,500 in this deal, but the Mitsubishi deal, for example, I can only earn $1,450 on, right? And so the comp plan is telling me, hey, go spend your time closing more of these multi-year outbound deals, because even if they're the same size as another deal, this deal is better for the business, and so paying me more money. And your reps, it's kind of fun. They think they're beating the plan, right? Oh, wow, you're paying me a 22% commission rate. It's like, yeah, I'm paying you a 22% commission rate because you signed a three-year ICP self-set deal, which is incredible for the business. So I'm glad to be paying you a 22% rate.
Yeah. So quick question on that one, because you said there's the big component of that approach is that the sellers, they feel like they're hitting the quota, they're going beyond the targets. So how's this playing out for the company? How you think the practitioners like you, me, and others in the revenue operations should guide the sales and marketing organizations on that front? I mean, there are different schools, right? It probably depends on the size of the company, but I want to hear your take on how to do the math behind, right? Because in the end, anything or everything that we do in the company ends up in the P&L balance sheet, sure, cash flow, right?
The first thing you have to do is understand the shape of your revenue today. So what percentage of your revenue is in month-to-month contracts, annual contracts, multi-year contracts, and where do you want that to get to? And how much money would you pay for the shape of that revenue to change? Let's say, you know, QuotaPath 4 years ago, 70% of revenue was in month-to-month contracts, 25% annual, 5% multi-year. Over the course of the past 3 years, we've shifted to virtually 100% of our revenue in two-year contracts. Our new business team only sells two-year contracts at this point, and we've made that fundamental shift using our comp plan. And so what we did is we said, okay, how much from a gross revenue retention perspective, what is the value to me of moving that revenue in the shape of that revenue, and how do I pass that value on to the rep? So when we first started this exercise, we actually used to pay basically almost 2x the commission rate for a multi-year deal versus a single-year deal. And you might say, wow, that's crazy. But if you actually look at the commission rate as a function of total contract value, you're paying a lower commission rate. So if let's say your base rate's 10%, and for a multi-year deal, they get 18%. Well, the truth is you're only paying 9% on total contract value versus 10% on new business, but the rep is making a lot more money and they're seeing that they lift. So the first thing to do is model the shape of the revenue that you're looking for, model how valuable that is to you, and pass that value on to the rep to drive them to change behavior. Now, the problem is if you do this in Excel, the rep might not in real time be thinking, oh, what happens if I make this a two-year deal? But if they see the pipeline in QuotaPath and change it, what happens is it becomes a two-year deal. That changes their behavior and drives incremental revenue. Now, if you jack up the rates and nothing changes, then you have a real problem of enablement or training or some other thing you got to work on.
Yeah, I mean, I like the way you structure this around the objectives and also how this impacts the revenue. And I think the more importantly, how you do conduct business, right? That's what really is behind this. And one more thing on this one is, I think when you are in the growth company, you're going to have a lot of changes on your product side. So being nimble and being able to use this playbook every year and adjust to what really matters that year, I think it's critical. Otherwise, it's going to be really hard to connect your go-to-market motions, your incentives, your pricing, and new releases. So I agree with you. Creating that type of approach is very important. So one more question on this quota setting process and commission payout. So I've heard that some of the organizations actually consider to have a flat commission rate on the deals without really playing with the accelerators, without playing additional spiffs necessarily. I agree that this is a pretty enticing idea. I see some risks here, but I want to hear your opinion, how you think about that.
The reason I don't love just a flat commission rate is because ultimately at that point, the comp plan isn't telling the rep what great looks like for the business. And so if I'm a rep, let's say I earn 10% on every single deal I close. What I'm going to do is I'm going to spend my time closing the deals that are the easiest to close. Those are not going to be aligned with where the business wants to go. So an example would be, I have a 150K deal or five 10K deals. But a 50K deal, maybe at the stage of our business, is 10 times or 15 times harder to close than a 10K deal. I can close 10K deals, one call closes or two demo closes, and a 50K deal, maybe it's like a six call close. But as the business, I want more 50K customers because I have one point of contact, you know, the cost of service is lower, the revenue retention is better. If you're just paying me 10% for anything I close, I'm closing the 10K deals all day. And you can't judge the rep for that, right? She's just looking at what she's doing and she's like, hey, I can knock out 15 of these 10K deals this quarter. Changing the rates based on the type of revenue or the value of the revenue of the business tells the seller what great revenue looks like and enables you to use the comp plan to drive a change in behavior. If I'm earning double the rate on a 50K deal, okay, maybe I can overcome the hurdle that is closing the 50K deal because it's better for my wallet if I go close that 50K deal. If you just pay a flat rate, you know, you're just telling the rep to close whatever they can and earn the money that they can. And that's not ultimately what the goal of comp plan is. You know, the bigger devil's advocate is at that point, why you have a comp plan? Like, why not just pay them a full salary and let them close whatever deals they close? And then if they don't close enough revenue, you manage enough of the business, right? That would be my kind of more productive pushback.
Good arguments. I would agree with a lot of that. The only argument that I'm hearing back in those conversations is like, okay, this is too complicated. And they say, if I'm going to spend my, I don't know, 2 months or whatever, 3 months trying to figure it out, might not be worth it. And still, I'm going to be prone to, you know, error. Or your stage of your product is not really giving you clear metric to track with a higher degree of accuracy. So, you know, there are probably cases where that could be considered, considering the stage, right? But I agree with you. You know, in the end, you want to narrow this down to the right math that tells you how much margin and money stays in your pocket. So you probably want to have something that is progressive and incentivizing people to go more for larger deals. I agree.
Well, yeah, and too complicated and too hard to administer, you should be on our sales team. That's exactly the reason why you use a tool like QuotaPath to automate that process, right? The comp plan's meant to be in the hands of the reps. It's not meant to be in Excel. And so a lot of people come to our front door and say, hey, look, like, it took me 20 hours to pay my reps' commissions last month. And that's because the comp plan isn't sitting in a tool that the reps are able to use and kind of like work alongside you. I get the, like, I don't know what great looks like, but you have something. You have contract terms. You know, you'd rather have net 30 annual payments than you would net 90 monthly payments. You have some sort of mechanic of what good looks like. And you might be earlier in your journey, but you got to give the rep something, because if you let me do any billing terms I want, I'm doing net 120, some sort of wild contract term thing that helps me out too. So the thing that I always ask on a lot of these like disco initial calls is, tell me about the deal that like felt good in your bones when you closed it. And then tell me about the deal where you like pinched your nose and signed the contract on the last day of the quarter because you need to get like the extra 5K. And you know what those are, you know? And so I do a lot of free compensation plan consulting and advising. So people should, I'm on LinkedIn pretty actively. I mean, I'm happy to help people design comp plans that'll like drive the right behavior as well.
AI is so interesting in every space, but within this, will hopefully get to a point where you say, like, here's my historical business numbers. What comp plan should I do? You know, like, what actually is the best for my business looking at the ICP and all the data we have in the CRM, and spit out, you know, three options of this will incentivize this or this or this. And is that kind of where you guys are trying to head?
Yeah, that's exactly the future, right? Yeah. So right now it's take your comp plan you have, use our AI product, we'll build it. Next step is we become more opinionated, right? Yeah. We take a lot of the learnings we have and put them in the GPT and start to be like more opinionated in that conversation. And then the future is the rep actually interacting with the AI to say, hey, what are the most likely paths for me to make 50 grand this quarter? Well, yep. You know, you have these deals in this stage, and if you could attach multi-year to a couple of these and you could do this, here are like the 10 different ways you make 50 grand this quarter. And that becomes really compelling. But you have to do it in a way that just doesn't tell the rep, make all your deals ICP self-set 3-year contracts, right? It has to be like within the realm of possibility based on my historical throughput. How could I get there, basically?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, because that is the easiest way. Like as a sales leader, I can be like, go close those deals. But easier said than done. You mentioned like, you know, paying out marketing teams on what they're driving. How often are you seeing teams outside of sales using Clotapath to pay bonuses or some type of commission outside of sales comp?
More and more, right? I mean, ultimately, with orgs wanting to be as lean as possible, you can't skate by not being like a revenue contributing member of the team anymore.
Yep.
You know, you're starting to see the ZERP era, you had all these customer success teams that didn't want to talk about contracts or renewals. They were just here to support. You're seeing a lot of that condense and compress and have people, hey, you're in front of a dollar, you got to close a dollar consistently, right? Marketing teams, sales teams, product teams, engineering teams, everybody at Clotapath earns variable comp. Every single employee. And so that's like really important. One, to dog food the product, obviously. But two, like the hypothesis is what it is, right? Like use the comp plan to drive these people to change their behavior and ship more products and do more things that are better for the business.
Yeah, I think that's where a lot of disagreement comes up or conflict within organizations is like, well, marketing is looking at this report and saying they're driving these inbounds and sales is saying they're not seeing those. And if you have a system that's showing you it all transparently, it's like, how can we collaborate more to drive more of what we need together and not disagree about the source of truth? So I think that's very exciting.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, you're paying them all a commission rate, right? It's just different math. So
yes.
If a marketer is earning 0.5% on pipeline generated, that's because there's an assumption of demo rate, ACV, and win rate, right? So that they're earning some sort of commission rate at the bottom, as is BDRs, as are reps, right? And so ultimately, like you're just trying to, a comp plan is here to drive somebody to do something within the scope of their control. Marketers can control pipeline, BDRs can control demo set. And so you're just trying to align their scope of control with how they're being paid. But at the end of the day, what your CFO is going to do is she's going to take all the commissions paid and the revenue and divide the two of them. And that's the commission cost of sale for the org for the period. People try to get too cute with it. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Only to a larger extent, a lot of companies do something similar, but they don't call this quota.
Mm-hmm.
They just pay in bonus and there's like, okay, there's a performance. There's like your own performance and there's a company's performance. So there's a little bit of that. But I think what you just described, you can take it to the next level and can just be very, very explicit about this and use that typical sales mechanism to drive that behavior and say, hey, this is what you do. This is what you get. Otherwise, you know, no money, no funny, right?
And it leads to less like internal finger pointing, right? If your gross revenue retention isn't what you want it to be, it's everybody's involved. It's because you generated the wrong pipeline and you sold the wrong customers and you shipped the wrong product and you know, it's too buggy and everybody's responsible for something like a revenue retention number for sure.
And I think for a lot of years in tech, you know, if you were a bonus employee, you kind of just got paid because tech was doing really well. And over the past few years, that's changed dramatically where bonuses are held back or whatever it may be. And salespeople are still making a commission. And that leads to, you know, tension between the different orgs too. And I think just everyone should be on a commission. Like if you did your job well, you delivered your part of it, great. And then that helps everyone know what they should be doing. So be interesting to see how that nets out for product and engineering and how they're thinking about it.
Yeah, I think the thing you'll have to make sure is that you basically want one North Star metric for your business. And I always think about this is, what is the ELT going to go tell the board? Hey, we're going to improve our GRR. Hey, we're going to improve our mid-market win rate. You know, whatever thing gets you from 10 million to 15 million in ARR, like that's the thing. You take that metric. Hey, this business does really well if we move this one metric. And then you do your best to tie everybody's individual performance to that metric in some way that's logically sound. And then that allows everybody to like operate on the same page. They know what needs to be done for this business to do well this year, and they're competitive accordingly.
Yeah,
that's absolutely a very good point. I can see this, like where this should come from. I mean, I think every organization, if it's trying to approach this that way, will need to define very well the roles and responsibilities. Because when you are on a comp plan, yeah, you're going to do things that are serving you to pay that commission. You won't do a lot of shit that you don't want to do, or it's not translating to that, right? So yeah, you better get your ducks in a row and assign the kind of job descriptions to the people so that they can focus. And then it should come, to your point, from ELT top down, because the managers will always have a tendency to push whatever they don't want to do to their employees. And if they don't want to do it because they only get paid on this, well, you better be prepared for that.
Well, and for the people like panicking, listening, on like an engineer, I'm thinking like 90-10, like 90% base, 10% variable. You know what I mean? Like
similar to a bonus. Yeah. It's like a little bit. Yeah.
It's just, it's a scope of control question, right? Like let's say GRR, gross revenue retention, is the big thing you have to improve. Okay. Well, an account manager is hands-on with renewals. You know, she's going to be more 60-40, 70-30 base variable because they're in the mix, right? Versus an engineer shipping a new feature that's received well, that's well built and well adopted, you know, the scope of control is definitely much smaller. And so they are much more in a base versus variable component for sure.
Would you make those things transparent in a company? How much everyone is getting paid by role in terms of the variable?
I would.
Yeah, I think you have to have the right culture to like support that. I think there's pros and cons. I think So I tend to think within your own team, I really, really advocate very deeply for comp transparency. So, you know, on a sales team, for example, I really like leveling team members. You have account executives, you know, account executive twos, senior AEs, everybody's on the exact same comp plan. They just have different bases and variables and then different corresponding quotas. And so they can see vertically how they rise to the org. The only challenge with having it be like wholly transparent across an entire organization is making sure that GTM teams understand the amount of incremental value that engineering brings, because they're going to be a much higher basis, right? And much more guaranteed. And then you can find yourself with reps angling for those sorts of bases. You get location-based stuff. So I admire the teams who do it. I think it's a great goal. There's just a lot of nuance there for sure. You have to communicate that.
Yeah. And I think with remote work, it adds in a whole other layer because you have, you know, a geo differentials and things. But I think the split, like, having everyone on some type of comp plan that's aligned, I think would be extremely impactful for an organization because it gets rid of the finger pointing. And to your point, Demetrius, like if someone's not doing something that doesn't align to their comp, maybe they shouldn't be doing it. And like that is, I think, a good discussion to be able to have. I do stuff all the time because someone wants me to. And sometimes I'm like, this isn't going to do anything for the revenue. And that gives you that conversation of like, why am I doing this? It might actually help get rid of some of the noise.
It's helped us with ruthlessly prioritizing roadmap, right? So like revenue retention is something that we as a business really strongly care about. 2023 was a challenge for a lot of tech businesses. And so a lot of tech businesses face retention headwinds because a team of 30 reps dropped to a team of 5, right? So it's a big focus for us. So why build an AI-powered plan builder? Well, if I could have an admin in QuotaPath save hours every time they roll out new comp plans versus clicking around and then just dump the plan and have AI spit out the plan, that will lead them to understand how much more incrementally valuable QuotaPath is versus running this in Excel. At this point, 90-95% of our roadmap is solely revenue retention focused. Like make QuotaPath easier to use, stickier and deeper for adoption for the customers we have today. And so we go through that cycle of like, okay, what is the hypothesis behind why building this feature will improve the gross revenue retention of our customers. And that just helps everyone stay on the same page.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And so who are your customers? What does your ICP look like? I'm assuming mid-market companies, but like what's the earliest and are you moving into enterprise at all?
Yeah. So we run a pretty wide gamut of team headcounts. I would say we run typically the upper SMB through the mid-market. Teams with anywhere from 5 to several hundred reps tend to be successful in Quota Path. Now we have orgs with 1 to 2 reps on them. I a lot of times they tend to find more value once you have a handful of reps to really like feel the pain of time spent and process and what have you. But running all the way up to several hundred reps, that's a really good sweet spot for us. We do really well with kind of core CRMs, Salesforce and HubSpot. We are a HubSpot Ventures backed company, actually. They were very big in our A, and we're the only commission tracking tool that has a two-way integration into HubSpot. So reps in HubSpot can actually see how much they're making on the deal card in HubSpot. They can forecast earnings, and you can run all the workflows in the tool itself.
But very cool.
Salesforce as well, we pass all of the commission information onto a custom object in Salesforce as well. Tech and tech adjacent tend to do well because they have a lot of distinct selling roles, right? So it gets really messy for BDRs and marketing and sales and account management. But we work with any team that calculates and pays commissions, you know, anything from auto dealerships to medical device sales teams to, you know, anybody using a CRM to calculate commissions in some way is a great customer for us.
And are you mostly selling with your small but mighty sales team, or is there a lot of product-led growth or marketing-led?
Our marketing team generates a huge volume of our pipeline today. We do a lot of top of funnel thought leadership in communities. We're very heavily embedded in communities such as Pavilion and Redbox Co-op, where we offer a lot of value at the top of the funnel. So we offer free compensation plan reviews. We have calculators for building sales ramp and quota to OTE ratios. And we have a free trial for 14 days. So anyone can sign up and start playing around and syncing CRM, what have you. So we're a very big organic and technical SEO shop and are really, really focused on providing value at top of funnel to prospects. And that free trial is a very unique product-led motion. So
yep.
we're the only player in the commission space that actually has a pricing page on their website where you can actually see the prices.
I noticed that.
You can sign up for a free trial of our product. We're not here to hide anything. So we want people to play around with the product, get their hands on it. We do sales assisted conversations. You can set up a trial call where we'll help you build your comp plans, but really taking a transparent and differentiated approach to B2B buying.
Yeah.
Which people tend to like.
Well, I think that's, I mean, being a HubSpot bad company, that's what HubSpot has done really well, both on the marketing side and the product led growth. And then to your point about earlier, like then you can focus on retention because you're getting these companies in early. You just need them to grow and scale with you, essentially.
Exactly. Exactly. And yeah. It's how do we continue to deliver more value? Example of this is we actually just launched a native Rippling integration. So historically, in a lot of these tools, you have to export the payments into a CSV and then go to your payroll provider and upload them. We're Rippling's first and only commission tracking direct integration where you can actually schedule the send of commissions into Rippling directly. So it might seem like a small thing, but it's something that takes a lot of time to export the CSV and push it. And so we feel like we have an opportunity to become this kind of middleware in between CRM, oftentimes ERP. You know, a lot of teams will pay commissions 50% when the deals move to closed one in HubSpot, and then 50% when the invoice is paid in QuickBooks. That's a pain. You have to export all your HubSpot data. You got to export all your QuickBooks data. You got to do the VLOOKUPs. You got to pay the person. So we're becoming that middleware between CRM and ERP, and then also the middleware to push it to payroll as well. And so trying to be as kind of sticky into workflow as possible.
And is that where partnerships is heading, is like creating more and more of those ecosystem connections?
Absolutely. Yeah. So spending a lot of time with major CRM players, a lot of time with major ERP players, a lot of time with major payroll players, and just trying to create as much value as possible.
Are you seeing any movement on the CRM side or any new CRMs popping up that you have your eyes on?
Yeah, so we've definitely seen a lot. Day AI is one that's come up a lot in conversations. Chris O'Donnell from HubSpot went over there and started that. So we see that a lot, like an AI-first native CRM for sure. Salesforce and HubSpot are still clearly the two bigger players. HubSpot is for sure making much more of a move into the mid-market. You know, you're starting to see larger and larger orgs
on HubSpot. And so it's been fun for us to work alongside them in a lot of those conversations. But yeah, it's fun to see some new players do some stuff too. It's always it's a cool space for sure.
And different industries, I'm sure there's different CRMs that lead those space. Who do you run into in terms of like competition the most?
So there's a number of commission tracking tools in the market. So, you know, Exactly has been the player for a long period of time. There are a number of others, you know, Captured IQ and Salesforce had purchased Spiff a bit ago. So you see a number of players in the market. We have a pretty unique approach to the problem, which is, hey, use your comp plan as a tool to actually drive performance. And so that's something that we spend a lot of our mental energy kind of focused on is everybody can calculate commissions, right? None of these businesses would be in business if they couldn't do the math of calculating your comp plan. It's how do we provide most value in a unique way to buyers has been a big focus for us for sure.
Yeah, and I'm sure you go up against status quo quite a bit too.
Excel's a big competitor for sure. And it's interesting, like, it's hard to convince somebody that they have a problem with commissions. And so what we try to do is when we have, you know, we're trying to, in discovery, talk through, okay, is your comp plan performing, right? Like, is your comp plan doing what you want it to do for these people and for your business? And, hey, you have a multi-year accelerator, but you're only paying an extra 2% on a 10% deal. You know, no surprise that 10% of your revenue is on a multi-year deal because your reps actually for a multi-year, they discount the ARR so much that the bump in commission rate offsets and they earn less money on a multi-year deal than a single-year deal, right? It's that kind of stuff where like you don't really think it through from start to finish. Your comp plan isn't performing the way that you want it to. And so our best question on initial disco is what type of deal earns the rep the most money possible? And do you have enough of those deals today? And the answer is always no. And so that's like a fun thing to use to try to change thinking on performance of comp plans.
I have a question for you too, RevOps leaders. RevOps teams manage so many tools for so many things. And I know comp tools are somewhat newer fad, although they've been around for a while. Why don't more companies have them? Is it because the CRO doesn't push for it? Or what's the... I haven't had a comp tool at any company I've worked for. And we have many other tools. So what is your thoughts on that?
I think there's a couple. One is from a status quo perspective, if you are calculating and paying commissions in Excel, and you have a finance team that's very Excel native, like there's nothing wrong with Excel inherently, right? And so I think the one is just, we've always paid commissions in Excel. You know, it takes me a couple hours every month. It's not a problem. I'm happy to keep doing it, especially in like a, you know, efficiency of costs playbook that a lot of orgs are trying to run. The other is just like a general awareness thing. Like I think a lot of people just don't know that there are tools to calculate and pay commissions on your behalf. But really, when I have those conversations, the thesis is less like, hey, I want to save you time. Now, that's what a lot of people show up to our front door with. They show up to our front door being like, it took me 18 hours to calculate commissions and I paid 3 people wrong and my reps are going to quit. And that's clearly a conversation we've had a couple times over. But, you know, when you dig into it, it's like, okay, your comp plan isn't actually performing the way you want it to. And you ask the devil's advocate question, like, why do you even have a comp plan? And the number of people who say, well, because I have to, or because I hired the rep and I told them I pay them variable comp, right? Like, that's why are you spending all your mental energy and time on something that's creating no value for your business? And so I think when you start to have that conversation, it opens the door to things that are much more productive. And frankly, you know, Demetrius, you were talking about like, hey, I want to change my comp plan every year, right? You know, what's the theme of the year? My push would be, what's the theme of the quarter, right? Like, why does your comp plan only have to change once a year? Why can't every quarter you go into the quarter and say, we just launched this new product. I want you to sell more of this product. And the reason is because it would be annoying to go back to your Excel formula and go to character, you know, cell A3 and character 954 and say, well, if the close date is before March 31st, then they get this, and it's a nest of a mess in Excel. But if you have a tool, you can actually use your comp plan to drive behavior.
And the like education of the sales rep. I mean, that's such a big part of it, of like, how do I make them understand what is actually going to make the money? And if you have a tool that tells them, that helps solve that problem.
Our initial go-to-market motion, you asked about like product-led, our initial go-to-market motion in 2020 was a rep first, like, kind of like a Loom style distribution where we wanted reps to actually sync their own data, build their own comp plans, and just track their own commissions themselves. Now, the challenges were, honestly, reps didn't understand their comp plan enough to be able to model it in the product. And then they didn't actually have like a lot of the CRM permissions to sync CRM data. So we went to the RevOps leader in more of a top-down, like a bottoms-up. But that was the initial vision of the product, right? It's a rep-first. Reps love QuotaPath. And they love it more than any other player in the space because it was built for them. And then we can also bring everybody in together to work together.
Yeah, I think you outlining a lot of good stuff here. I remember when an Anaplan was actually entering the market, right? And these tools were pretty much designed mostly for operators within the company. What I mean by that, anyone who's doing the sales comp in these companies, you know, would just have a lot of options to manage this. But to your point about focusing on the rep, that was not really user-friendly. I mean, as a matter of fact, I still think the Anaplan sucks on that front. For me, at least, there are two, maybe three areas where most of the problems with the comp plan occur. It's not even a design. One is the mechanics behind how I'm going to get paid on that deal. And that's usually taking a lot of time explaining, et cetera. You know, you can have FAQs, you can have as many as you want, but still, it's going to happen. And then the second one is the non-standard deals. And unfortunately, when you're a small company or a growth company and you don't have a very consistent approach to what you're selling as a package or product, that's where a lot of these systems, they're going to run into problems. You know, and that's why Excel is very, it can take anything, right? So to Ryan's point about a status quo, I think that's what is at the core of status quo. The third one is a little bit my experience, and probably a lot of people will just go after my ass on this, but I'll say this. There's a little bit of ethics problem where we go in splitting the deal between the five different people that not necessarily were involved, and that money is just gone. In Excel, it's much easier to hide it. So I think, you know, that's why there's a little bit of resistance against this. And the system is designed to operate in a somewhat more standard way. So, you know, it's almost like setting up the macro in Excel. It won't work if you have a lot of exceptions. It can only run if you have something that is in standard, right? And I'm exaggerating this with this comparison, but the systems are, of course, are becoming more intelligent, and with the AI, definitely going to become even more intelligent on that front. But it's just, that's what is inhibiting a lot of the leaders to move into that. I think RevOps would be more on board with that because they see the value right away. It's just a hesitation on the other side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think like the customers we partner with, you know, when we do a demo, the first slide we show, we don't show a lot of slides. We show one slide up front, which is our philosophy on comp plans, right? And it's like our philosophy is that your comp plan is a performance driver, not a byproduct. And you'll be on demos and people will, you can tell immediately if they get it or not. And if they don't get it, it's a really interesting, I work a lot with Kyle Morton from owner.com. He's an advisor for us. And he's like, it's a psychographic signal that they're probably not a great fit for you, right? If they don't want reps to have transparency in what they're earning, if they don't want to like show the way in which a rep hits quota, sometimes my reps will stop the demo and be like, okay, what, like, I don't mean to be rude, but like, do you want a comp plan rule or not? You know, like, what are you looking for? And they'll, you know, they're looking for just like a better, faster Excel, which is a totally like fine solution, right? If it's just like, hey, I want to take Excel that's only mine and automate it more, you know, no harm. Like it's like your prerogative, but I think you're going to find that you're not going to have top performing reps who want to stay with you for a very long time if they don't feel like they understand how they're making money. What I like about our space in particular is, you know, we have great competitors and they solve problems in really unique ways. We try to be really differentiated in how we solve the problem. And what's nice about that is some people are going to like it and some people won't. And, you know, you talk about regrettable versus non-regrettable loss. We do have some non-regrettable loss where people go with a competitor because this is the thing that they wanted. They wanted a solely finance focused, not rep visibility tool. And there are tools that solve that problem in that way. And we say, hey, like, you're not going to be happy with QuotaPath. it's not going to be what you're looking for, and that's totally fine.
AI is taking away a lot of the low-skill sales jobs and entry-level jobs to some degree. And so then what you're asking for is experienced reps who are willing to build relationships and do things that, like, get up to speed quicker and do more of the art than just, like, the monotonous tasks. And with that, you're going to have reps demanding transparency, because if they're good enough to be in that role, they're going to demand that. And so I'm curious how you're seeing AI impact, you know, the sales productivity space in general, outside of just your tool, and then, you know, how you've spoken a little bit about how it's impacted your tool, but would love to hear a little bit more.
Yeah. So my take has always been, I don't think AI is going to replace humans really in any way. And I don't think that's, like, a novel take at this point. It's just going to let your reps spend their time on what really creates value and how they create value. And so, you know, we think about things like updating fields in CRM or pushing Slack conversations into CRM or things like that. AI is amazing for. And it's just it's a question of time capacity, where AI will give reps the ability, and already has, to run more deals and manage more cycles and just have, like, higher efficiency and ARR per rep. So we have spent a lot of time in the past year. You know, the reason we have a 6-person team is because we're able to, you know, double our ARR per rep in the past 18 months. And it's just the amount of revenue that an individual rep can close. And that's because we've taken a lot of the manual stuff you have to do to nurture a deal and used AI to automate it. And so our thinking is, hey, they're still demoing a product, answering specific questions, tying all these different trains of thought together, understanding what you're trying to drive in performance with your comp plan. Like, there's a lot of really human element to selling Quotapath, and buyers want to buy from humans, especially at our ACVs. That's where a rep really shines. A rep is no different than AI in terms of taking the recording of the call and spitting out next steps and updating next steps consistently, so they don't end up on my dirty ops board in CRM, right? Like, that AI is amazing for that. And so that's the thesis. It's like, use AI to do what humans aren't uniquely skilled for, and allow them to spend more of their time creating actual value for customers.
And if you're doubling their quota in a year, you should probably be transparent about how they're getting paid, right? So, like, I just think it's going to force some of the transparency that hasn't been there in the past because of what we're asking reps to do.
I think this is a very good point. I have a question for you, Ryan, regarding that. Because you mentioned a lot of stuff that is focusing on the reps and how you communicate with them, how you see AI helping you to facilitate some of these conversations about how I'm getting paid, you know, how my comp plan is really designed, powering this by AI and your library that you know, every company should have, right, around, like, how you structure these things. I mentioned earlier, like, how much additional work it requires to answer these questions. So the AI is a great catalyst here that can step in immediately and just explain that in a split second, connecting this with a CRM, connecting with a comp plan itself, design, you know, and the library, maybe a few questions that, you know, are gathered from other conversations that AI already had. Do you see that this being a key element for you and your product development in the future?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, like, what we're trying to do is give the rep, and I think I talked about this a little bit before, but give the rep the ability to say, like, how do I earn here? Like, asking the AI the ways in which they earn their full OTE, using their past data. Hey, historically, you know, 15% of your deals are multi-year and your average contract value is 35K and, you know, all these sorts of things. We project you'll earn this. We think you'll variably, because tools like Gong already project how much a rep is going to close, right? And forecasting tools project how much it's going to close. Why not then just take that and project how much you think they're going to make based on their comp plan? And then it becomes a question of, okay, well, I'm on an 100K base, 100K variable. Quotapath projects I'm going to make 65K variably this year based on my mechanics. What are the ways in which I can get closer to 100? Well, you know, historically within the team, we've seen a range of percentage of multi-year contracts be between, you know, 20 and 60%. So if you could, like, move up, you're below the leaderboard in terms of percentage of revenue and multi-year contracts. And so you start to see, like, a rep being able to, in the same way they play with, like, a Gong forecast, they can start to play with a Quotapath forecast to understand their best path to earn. Now, the logic is even more complex there, because you have to have an individual rule set for them, you know, on how they earn paired with the data. And that's where AI becomes a really powerful tool for a rep and for explaining how a team member earns money.
My next question for you is do you see that there is a future for RevOps to create the systems, system architecture where AI from one system talks to another AI from another system?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, there's no reason not to. I mean, I think that orgs will be required in the same way that they have open APIs to have open LLMs that people can talk to. Absolutely. Businesses are not going to be comfortable with like their data in like walled garden LLMs, I don't believe. And we do this a lot ourselves, right? So we, you know, tap into the Gong API to pull like transcripts and understand how calls are being best used and then run it through LLMs to process what are the themes that we're seeing in terms of closed lost ops. And so I think the power for the business is going to be the quality of the LLM to solve the problem, but then the business, the customer is going to be able to interact with those LLMs and help them talk to each other. Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I see that a lot of these systems already, like you mentioned, Gong and others are trying to build that capability, but it has to go a little bit further in order to, you know, take a full credit for it. Right. And I think that's the moment when, okay, now we have these API like AIs and then start talking to each other, connecting and quickly doing that work for you. And then going back to our earlier point, the end user, like Reb, it will greatly benefit from it right away, right? The readout is much better. That means the path going forward, quota path, is looking much better for you as well. So I think it's a very interesting space that we're going to experience a lot of shakeup. When I think about setting up the next revenue operations organization, I keep that in mind because, you know, that is coming. That is coming. So we want to move to Kudos?
Absolutely. You've mentioned a few other companies already that you're excited about, but what are two other companies that you're excited about that are partners, competitors, companies you use yourself that you want to call out?
We're a big Clay and Smart Lead shop here at QuotaPath. So we built a lot of the warm outbound engine ourselves. So former admins using QuotaPath, former reps who've used QuotaPath, closed lost ops, loading that data into Clay, understanding, you know, hey, this is Beth from Jones Software. Look on LinkedIn that Beth now works at Alpha Software. Load that into a Smart Lead campaign. Say, hey, Beth, saw you used to use QuotaPath and X, now use it in Y. Do you want to take another look? And so that combo has been really big for us for warm outbound, and we're a big warm outbound shop. And then Replit's one we've been playing around a lot with for AI building. Specifically, I had a problem that I posted on LinkedIn where I was like, why can't summarized Slack conversations live in CRM today and Salesforce today? Companies are under the same ownership. And so it was always a challenge where I would push on a rep in Gong and I'd say, hey, it looks like you're not talking to this op at all. And they'd say, well, yeah, I am, but we're in this Slack channel and we're talking 100 times a day, but that doesn't create an activity or, you know, a task or anything in CRM. And so Brandon Smith and my team, he came back from parental leave last Monday. And he was like, oh, I could build that. And so he built a whole app in Replit that basically allows you to take a Slack channel. It then runs it through an LLM to summarize the tone of the conversation and the key points tied to an account in Salesforce. And then it creates an activity that can be referenced in Gong. So he did that in like 4 hours.
So you're going to go build an app in Salesforce that people can utilize?
Exactly. And so we're kind of like, we call it Slacktivity and we're kind of baiting in our stealths here, but I'm joking with Brandon that it's our NRR driver for the year. It's like turn around and sell it to our customers or something like
that. Yeah, absolutely. That's very cool.
For sure.
Well, and I think that's the great part about AI is like, you don't have to be the most tech savvy person in the world to build something that is very helpful in a short period of time.
You just have to have a very clearly defined problem you're looking to solve. Like when we first started talking about ChatGPT and AI and what have you, people were just trying to like shove AI into whatever they were doing with no real rhyme or reason. Like this is an actual problem that I as a sales leader have. I'm in pipe reviews with my reps. I'm saying it doesn't look like you're talking to these people. They're saying, Ryan, I told you already, I talk to this person 100 times a day on Slack. The deal's moving along, I promise. I get heart palpitations about it. I just want to see it. And so, you know, build an app that summarizes the activity on a daily basis tied to the contact and the account record in CRM and give me the themes of what the conversation's about. And then you can take that problem and use AI to build it. And so I think Absolutely. That's where teams are going to be more successful if they take that approach versus, hey, let's just shove AI into everything, which is why I get the terrible outbound, hey, Ryan, saw you went to Dartmouth, enter. Do we talk about IT services or something? Like that's like shoving AI into a place where it didn't need to be versus having a specific problem that you're trying to solve.
Yeah. We didn't get into our hatred for AI made messages, but we have in many other podcasts.
I'm sure you
don't worry. It's covered. And then last but not least, do you have a top three tips for us that you want to share?
Yeah. So for RevOps leaders, you know, a lot of what I think about is how do RevOps leaders become more strategic? It's like a big theme on LinkedIn, and especially as they want to prepare for moving into more of a CRO style role or a senior RevOps role. I think the biggest one, you know, tip one is understand very clearly the metrics the business needs to move in order to be successful. Do you need to improve GRR? Do you need to improve win rate? Do you need to raise your ACV? What is the metric that you need to move as a business to be successful? And as a RevOps leader, bring that metric into everything you do to justify it. So building comp plans, align an entire organization on how they will contribute to the movement of that metric. And then on a RevOps roadmap perspective, tie all the work that you're doing to the moving of that metric. So if you're going to spend 9 months switching from Salesforce to HubSpot, you better have a very clear understanding as to how that time spent is going to drive an improvement in your gross revenue retention and why, or else you're going to continue to be seen as this systems admin versus like a true strategic leader in work. And then my final one is learn how to write SQL. I think SQL is the best. I think people should learn how to write it. And that's a hill I'm going to die on. I it's saved me in a lot of components of my career. So that'll be the one I'll end with.
Right.
Love it. I like those. And I was even just thinking like about how someone on your team could build that tool quickly. It's like, I think more and more of that is going to come out of sales ops teams of like, how can you creatively solve problems with AI or SQL, whatever it may be. Well, Ryan, thank you. Yeah, both. Ryan, thank you so much. This was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.